Global stock markets were on an upswing Thursday. The S&P 500 reached an all-time high. Investors around the world feeling pleased after the Federal Reserve confirmed hopes that a rate cut is likely coming. The Fed is not the only central bank hinting at looser monetary policy. Central banks in Europe, the UK, and Japan are also freeing up cash to deal with a global economy that's slowing because of the trade war between the U.S. and China, the world's two biggest economies.
A strong showing for Slack. The workplace messaging platform made its trading debut on the New York Stock Exchange Thursday. The stock began trading at $38.50 a share, valuing it at more than $23 billion. That's well above the $16 billion reference point set by the stock exchange.
United Nations investigators have become the latest group to claim that Saudi Arabia's crown prince is likely liable for the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, a critic of the regime. Agnes Callamard says her forensics team flew to Turkey to conduct their probe and was also given evidence from Turkish authorities. Callamard is demanding that Secretary General Guterres open a wider international probe into Salman and for sanctions against him.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's June 21st, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Hey, June 21st, isn't that the first day of summer? I believe it is. Welcome to it, and we're glad to have you with us on the final day of the week, final business day of the week getting underway. We've put together a really good show for you today. As usual on Friday, our regulars are here and some really good conversation coming up. First, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management will be here. We've got a lot to talk about after the Federal Reserve decision this week and really good bounce back for stocks. A little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from skiff.com for an aviation conversation. Boeing thrown a lifeline this week at the Paris Air Show with big orders for the 737 MAX, which remains grounded, but they've got some competition from Airbus, and we'll tell you how American Airlines is involved in all of this as well. That'll be about 5:38 this morning. Of course, we'll also keep you posted on the latest news, weather, sports, and traffic as we move through the 5 o'clock hour this morning, so stay with us. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later this morning. Dow futures are off about a quarter of a percent this morning. Same story over at the S&P and NASDAQ futures off nearly a third. As we look around the rest of the globe this morning, in Europe, markets are in the green. In London, Germany, and France, up just a fraction in London to up nearly a third in Germany and France. And in Asia, markets in the red this morning. The Nikkei ending the day down nearly 200 points, down nearly a percent. In Hong Kong, off nearly a quarter of a percent, and in China, the Shanghai is up nearly a half a percent. And as we look at oil this morning, in the U.S. at $57.17 a barrel, which is up about 10 cents. We begin this morning with the news for us about what's happening around the globe. We're going to get into this a little, too, with Paul as we get going this morning. The U.S. calling off airstrikes at the very last minute against Iran for shooting down a drone in the Gulf, Persian Gulf airspace, too. FAA has banned U.S. jetliners from parts of the Persian Gulf airspace over a safety risk of potential conflict there. The FAA says it's growing increasingly concerned about having commercial airliners in that space. We were looking at oil. We have been looking at oil all this week. This morning, just a little bit of bump in New York. And news on the Fed, follow-up on the Fed. Some Fed officials are out talking about the decision this week to leave interest rates where they're at for now and why they made those decisions. Let's bring in Paul Nolte to get going on that conversation this morning and others. Paul is an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager, Kingsview Asset Management, here in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
Let's begin with the situation with Iran. These airstrikes apparently were in the works, called off at the last minute. We look at this morning to see what impact it might be having on the markets, especially the oil markets.
Yeah, we got a big rise in oil yesterday after that report came out that they had taken down the drone. and very little follow through at this point. And we take a look at the energy market. One of the things that we've been noticing over the last couple months or so is actually we've had a huge amount of production of oil, especially here in the U.S., that have actually brought down prices for energy down into the low mid-50s. We even touched just below 50 a little while ago. So we're back up to what we would consider kind of mid-range. We figure oil should be trading somewhere between $50 and $60 a barrel, so we're not too terribly worried about big changes in oil prices. And we've seen a little bit of it at the pump as oil prices have come down here at the pump over the last few weeks.
Yeah, yesterday I was listening to some of the reporting on this Iran situation, and Trump administration officials citing that we don't rely on that oil from that region much anymore. And so our interests are a little bit less than they were, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago.
Absolutely. You know, we are actually now the largest oil producer on the globe. And export a lot now, which was not the case 10 years ago. So we are a lot more energy independent. And you're right, we don't really need that oil from Iran to help us out.
Would we see a big jump if we did initiate some sort of military campaign against Iran?
Oh, absolutely. Only because, I mean, that is a huge oil-producing area and can draw in a lot of other interests, Saudi Arabia, et cetera, and it's going to have an impact. That's where a lot of oil does flow through the Straits of Hormuz, and that will have a major impact on oil trading around the world. So we could see oil prices jump significantly if there's some type of military, especially prolonged military action.
And so far, stocks don't seem to be reacting much to this either. This was a really good week for Wall Street.
This was a very good week for Wall Street, wrapping up a very good month for Wall Street, as investors cheer a Fed that is indicating, at least, that they're open to the idea of cutting interest rates, most likely at their July meeting, and that happens at right at the end of July, 30th and 31st of July.
The Fed, one Fed governor out today, Fed James Bullard, talking about why he's in favor of a cut. It goes back to the inflation issue. They're not seeing the inflation target where they want. What's going on with that?
Yeah, that's been something that's been, well, it is very hard. It's been something that's been discussed for a long time. And James Bullard was the one dissenting Fed governor in the vote to keep rates where they were. He voted to cut rates, and he's been one of the more dovish Fed governors all along from the St. Louis Fed. And the problem that is going on right now is inflation. It's not where they want to see it. They want to see a 2% inflation rate, and certainly by most measures, inflation is running at 1.5% to maybe 2% or so, but it's been generally soft. And I know we'll get a lot of arguments about, well, what about this price or that price? But when you look at all the different prices out there of things that people buy, they're pretty flat. Interest rates or cutting interest rates doesn't necessarily make inflation go up. If that were the case, we would have seen a lot higher inflation over the last 10 years when we've had interest rates essentially at zero. So the fact that we're going to cut interest rates does not necessarily mean inflation is going to go up. And so I think that's one of the fallacies in looking at this decision as a way to boost inflation. You know, the stereotypical or the textbook way of looking at inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. We don't have a lot of money, and we've talked about wages. You know, wages are growing at roughly 3% or so. We'd like to, if you want to see inflation, you really need to see much higher wage growth to where consumers can go out and start to spend an awful lot of money, and we're not producing a lot, we're not importing a lot, and that could generate some inflation. But right now, the wage picture is pretty stable, right around 3%. So, again, I have a problem with cutting interest rates in order to boost inflation. The two are not necessarily tied to each other on this side of the equation.
Yeah, and I think Bullard is speaking this morning. That's where we're getting some of this. He says that he wanted the rate cut as insurance against a slowing economy and weaker inflation expectations. The slowing economy part of that, that should be concerning, right?
It is concerning. It's been something that we've been noting for a while in the fact that we're seeing global growth slowing. And it's been concentrated in Europe, some in Japan. And certainly a lot of it is around trade. So the fact that we're still in a trade war with China and we've had some issues pop up here and there where Trump has decided, you know, hey, we're going to put tariffs here or tariffs there. Interest rates and cutting interest rates does not necessarily help the trade picture. Until we get an agreement with China, I think that's going to be a big overhang, not just for the U.S., but for the global economy. And lower interest rates does not fix that trade picture. So again, I think the two are not necessarily working together where you can pull on this lever and have that impact happen somewhere else.
Wall Street may have a selfish reason for wanting lower interest rates. We were talking about this. More money in the pockets of some of these companies would mean potentially more stock buybacks.
Yeah, and so when we lower interest rates, and we did see this over the last decade, what happened with a lot of the companies when you are faced with very low rates of interest, instead of buying more plant equipment or investing back in the company to expand production, a lot of companies went and borrowed money and bought back their stock. So it was a way for them to boost the stock price. It changed the balance sheet of the company. They're now a little bit more in debt than they were, but they see it as a cheap way to improve the outlook for the company as well as the stock price. It doesn't do anything for a production perspective or a revenue or earnings. It helps boost the earnings per share because my total share count now is less on the same amount of earnings. So that's kind of an artificial boost, and that's when you start taking a look at the earnings picture, and that'll start up actually in another 2 weeks here on Wall Street. Those are the things that we take a look at, is the revenue number and net income number without looking at the share count.
Paul, I sat and watched all of Jay Powell's news conference this week, and I'm not one of those people that sees him on the side of a rate cut just yet. I think he's still waiting to see some data.
I think so. And when you do take a look at his commentary, he has been talking patience. He has been they're now data dependent. In essence, what he said at the press conference is, we're going to wait and see kind of how the data comes in. But I think he did a good job of going down the middle, as it were. And I'm not convinced that he's on the side of cutting rates at this point. You know, there's certainly half of the Fed officials, based on their dot plots, thought that, you know, rates would be lower by the end of the year. I'm not so sure Jay's one of them. Again, looking at some of the economic data, we're in a position where we, you know, with stocks at all-time highs, we're cutting interest rates. The U.S. economy is doing okay, nothing fabulous. It is weakening in some parts, but I don't see where it's in dire need of an interest rate cut here. So I don't disagree with your comment about Jay Powell. I think he has been playing it down the middle, and I think he's going to try to get the other governors to be a little bit more patient and wait before we cut rates.
Yeah, because again, it goes back to this. We sit and watch Wall Street this week. The S&P now in record territory. If things were that bad, we
stocks wouldn't be here. And if things were that good, we wouldn't need the rate cut, and certainly not the three that Wall Street is anticipating this year. So there's something wrong between the bond market and the equity market. And we're looking at the equity market as being on the wrong side of the equation. I think it's gotten far too ahead of itself at this point. So we're taking a little bit of money off the table. And we've talked about it over the last couple of weeks, where with stocks at all-time highs here and valuations stretched, I think it makes some sense to take some of the profits as we did in March when we first got up to these levels.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what do you do now with the portfolio? Do you, you're taking money off the table. What are you doing with it? And are there potential buys here or moves that we could take with our portfolio?
No, I think there are some very good buys in the market. There's a huge difference right now between the growth side of the house, so technology stocks, and those that are typical growth stocks. And value, and the value stocks have definitely underperformed growth. So we're starting to shift money toward a little bit more value, finding some of the names that are pretty inexpensive. healthcare fits into that category. So in general, healthcare is fairly inexpensive. We've talked about international. International had a great week as investors went to the risk assets. So more of the commodities. The dollar has come off as talk of cutting interest rates actually hurts the dollar. And that will continue as long as we talk about cutting interest rates. So that will weaken the dollar, which will, in essence, boost the value of your holdings that you have outside the U.S. So emerging markets and the international markets actually did very well, especially relative to the S&P this week. We continue to like those areas, and we've kind of shied away a little bit from the S&P 500 in favor of sending money outside the U.S. And looking at more, not so much cap-weighted investments in the U.S. So we're taking a look at some of those that are in the next tier below the S&P 500.
Paul, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Yeah, we can chat on their portfolios, investments, financial planning, etc., and they can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and happy to continue that conversation.
Well, we appreciate you coming in today, as always. Have a wonderful weekend.
We'll do that. Enjoy the sunshine this morning.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's an SVP and Senior Portfolio Manager at Kingsview with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. Lots of aviation news this week, including some big orders for Chicago-based Boeing at the Paris Air Show. And orders for 737 MAX aircraft, the aircraft that remains grounded after two deadly crashes in the course of 6 months. Joining us this morning to talk a little bit about this is Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. Brian is with us via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's begin with that. The Paris Air Show, some big orders for Boeing. American is in the mix, too. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. But first, talk to us a little bit about the big sign-up there for Boeing.
Yeah, Boeing did get a surprise order this week at the Paris Air Show. It came from International Airlines Group, which is probably something our listeners haven't heard of, but International Airlines Group, or IAG as we would call it, is a very big deal. They own British Airways, they own Iberia in Spain, they own Aer Lingus in Ireland, and they own a couple of low-cost carriers within Europe. So this is about as big of a get as you can get if you're Boeing. IAG said they wanted as many as 200 Boeing 737 MAX jets. It's just a letter of intent. It's not a firm order. I did speak with some people, though, who expect that it will become firm. And there's a simple reason for this, Steve, right? It's just like when you buy anything else, if there's a situation like this, an airplane or whatever it is in the news not doing well, you can go out there and get yourself a great deal. In the airline industry, nobody ever says how much you've paid for an airplane. It's always top secret, but all the big customers get discounts. And in a case like this, you can expect that IAG probably got one of the greatest discounts for airplanes in the history of airplanes. IAG's CEO, Willie Walsh, came out and he said that he has confidence in the airplane. And one of the interesting things about this, Steve, is that this CEO in a prior life, years and years ago, was a 737 pilot. So I think more than most people, he probably knows what he's talking about. If I remember correctly, he may have even flown a simulator at some point. So this is a big boost of confidence for this airplane. And it'll be interesting to see what IAG does with the airplane going forward, because they really don't fly 737s anymore, but I guess they want to add them.
Not only a boost of confidence for the airplane, but for Boeing and for consumers as well, I think. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, because if you have an airline as big as this, several of these airlines, big airlines, this airlines group, this says basically, hey, we don't have a problem with this aircraft. At least right now, we don't.
Yeah, certainly it is a big boost of confidence for the program and for Boeing. I do think a lot of travelers are going to be making up their own minds, right? If you're in Chicago and you're going to fly United in 6 months and you're going to book the 737 MAX, maybe you're not going to wake up and say, oh, well, it's okay because this guy in London I've never heard of named Willie Walsh says the aircraft is safe. You're probably going to want to make up your own mind. But yeah, in the long run, it is a good boost for Boeing and the program. And I have to tell you, Steve, I talked to a lot of people in the industry all the time, and everyone pretty much thinks that over the long term, the 737 MAX is going to return to service, that people are going to have short memories, and that in 10 years, it's going to be one of the safest aircraft of all time. There are some whispers now, right, that Boeing will probably or could change the name of the aircraft, maybe retire MAX. The IAG press release didn't use the word MAX when announcing the letter of intent. Take that for what you will, but it's kind of interesting.
What International Airlines Group giveth, Airbus taketh away. They signed a big order, Airbus did, with American Airlines. Talk to us a little bit about this choice for American.
Well, Steve, you have to remember that this is the big game in aerospace, right? There's only two companies that make big-time commercial airplanes, Airbus and Boeing. And so they both trade orders all the time. They steal customers. One company steals customers from the other, and it just goes on and on. So you would always expect Airbus to book a lot of orders at a show like this, and Boeing as well. This week, Airbus was introducing a new plane at the Paris Air Show. It's called the Airbus A321 XLR. XLR stands for extra long range. I'm sure lots of folks have flown on this Airbus A321. American flies it, Delta flies it. It usually has about 200 seats. It flies shorter U.S. domestic routes. Airbus has come out and said, you know what, we can use this airplane and we can have airlines fly it not just from Chicago to Los Angeles as American does, but, you know, if we add an extra fuel tank, American might be able to fly it from Chicago to London or even beyond into continental Europe. American is very excited about this airplane. I should walk back and say, you know, the big deal about this airplane is that it has only one aisle. It doesn't have two. When people fly to Europe, usually, right, from Chicago, they're used to having two aisles. Maybe there's 9 seats across. There's lots of room to stretch and walk around. The Airbus A321 is a narrow-body airplane, and there are some fears out there that it won't be as comfortable as maybe the 787s American is flying from Chicago to Europe right now. But airlines love this airplane. It has very good costs for them, and they're very excited about it.
It has a range of 4,700 miles. Talk to us about why that's significant.
Well, it's significant, as we said, because it can fly not just from, you know, Chicago to L.A., but it can fly from Chicago well into continental Europe. And, you know, the 787 and the 777, these are great airplanes. But on a lot of routes, they're just too much airplane. And so, you know, let's say there was an airline out there that wanted to fly from Chicago to Budapest, right? That's not a route airlines generally fly. You might not want to send your shiniest, newest, biggest airplane on that route. You might not need all the seats. You might not need all the technology. So you might want to test the route with an airplane that's cheaper, frankly, a little less comfortable for passengers, and see if it works. So this should give airlines more flexibility to start new routes between the United States and Europe. And I talk a lot about Europe, but frankly, the United States and also South America as well. There are some places in deep South America that you can't get to from East Chicago or Dallas-Fort Worth unless you're using a big, expensive airplane right now. And with 4,700 miles of range, an airline could fly from Chicago probably well into South America with that single airplane.
While we're still talking about American Airlines, let's update people on the union dispute there. You've written a story about how this might actually be more disruptive than the 737 MAX grounding.
Yes, over the last 3 months or so, American has been having a pretty nasty labor dispute with its mechanics union. The mechanics, American has said, have been intentionally slowing down the airline. I think we talked about this, Steve, several months ago. It happened at Southwest as well. But what happens in the sort of work slowdown is maybe mechanics decide they don't want to work overtime. Maybe they find a little bit of a problem with the airplane, and in the past they would defer it so it could be fixed at another time. But this time they say, nope, the airplane can't fly, and so American has to cancel the flight. In the aggregate, this was a really bad problem for American, if you can believe it. In a 23-day ending June 14th, American said it canceled 722 flights because of what it called a maintenance slowdown. It said 175,000 passengers were affected. This was really bad for American. So that's the bad news. The good news is last week, a federal judge granted a temporary restraining order against the union. The judge said the union had to knock it off. They had to go back to basically working regular shifts and doing their job as they always have. Generally, you know, work groups will follow what the federal judge says, and operations should roughly go back to normal for American. But this was definitely a problem, right? Because when you have a MAX grounding, American knows 2 months in advance we're not going to be able to fly that flight. But with maintenance pulling airplanes out of commission at the last minute, American never knew what flight was going to be canceled and when, and people were really affected.
So here we are as we move into high travel season for the summer. What should people know about not only this dispute with American, but the 737 MAX?
Well, it's really status quo. You know, we talk about this every week on this radio program. It is great news that American has at least temporarily solved this labor problem. You know, most of the airlines know that the MAX is not going to be flying this summer, so that they prepared for it. I could make a prediction that this is going to be a horrible travel summer. I'm not sure that it will be, but I just don't know, Steve. So far, I think things are going okay. Airlines are generally able to do a little bit more with less. I hope that continues.
All right, Brian. Good conversation as always. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers, Senior Aviation Business Editor for Skift.com. That's at Skift on Twitter. Make sure you follow Brian as well at Brian Summers. And make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report, which arrives in your inbox, skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, a little bit of weakness on the stock futures this morning. Dow futures are off about 42 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures are down nearly a quarter of a percent as well. NASDAQ futures are off nearly a third this morning. Gold is trading higher, 1403. Silver trading a little bit lower. And oil is higher this morning at $57.66 a barrel in New York. Let's update agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you, sir. We're at about 50 degrees here outside the studios in Huntley. And the markets yesterday, again, reacting to rain in the forecast. It just doesn't quit raining, Steve, so you have to find some switch to turn it off if you can.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking at the forecast, too, and we might see a little bit of sun today, but wow, showers tomorrow and Sunday and Monday and even possibly Tuesday, right?
Yep, it's that way, and we've still got a few acres to plant. But the concern now is that the acres that have been planted really are not coming up because we're not getting the degree day units. And I still am hearing from farmers all over the Midwest saying, when is this going to quit? And our TV ag meteorologist, Greg Solier, says it will be slowing down, but it won't be quitting. So we continue to go with this. Interesting development, Steve, in the Fair Oaks dairy story. The dairy cattle abuse story that came out of the farm in Indiana about a week and a half ago. And let me share this quickly. New information available in the ongoing investigation into the alleged animal abuse at Fair Oaks Farms. Witnesses this week confirmed that employees of the Animal Recovery Mission who were on the farm working incognito, that they coerced their co-workers to perform the acts to be recorded on the video that was shown. And the Newton County, Indiana prosecuting attorney Jeff Trinsky said a third-party witness has come forward to corroborate the allegations made by a suspect that the ARM employee encouraged or coerced the behavior depicted in the portions of the video that have been released publicly. And he said detectives continue to investigate these claims through additional interviews and written discovery. So could have been some hanky-panky there by the photographer for the animal rights group saying, hey, give me some better shots so right. that I can share them.
Yeah, but we all know, Orion, if somebody tells you to beat up an animal, you're not going to do it, are you?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that because I don't know what happened in the conversation between them and the photographer. But I've had enough experience with some animal rights groups to know that they'll go to any length to get the story that they want to get. And so I'm going to give the investigators more time on this one.
Yeah, definitely. It's we'll see how this plays out. Orion, I saw a really cool story this week that the state of Illinois and this group called Illinois Reads is trying to get young people especially to read more about agriculture, ag literacy they want to focus on. That seems like a worthwhile project, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because there are so many young people who don't have much of a connection to the farm, and even if you do have connection to the farm, yeah, you always learn a great deal from items that you can read and follow through. And anything we can do to educate anybody about what it takes to put food on the table, a roof over our head, and now energy in the tank. I'm encouraged by that and glad to see that they're doing it. So, yeah, we'll watch that one.
IllinoisReads.org if people want to find more information. And I know you loved this story this week. The rack on the steer.
Yep.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I'm talking about it on Samuelson Says because it's a world. I mean, not too many animals get into the Guinness Book of World Records, but this one did. Texas Longhorn steer, not living in Texas, it's on a farm in Alabama, but it has now set the world's record for the longest rack of horns. I think 10 feet is 7 1/4 inches, which is a world record. It's been certified by Guinness. And yeah, I've shared that story several times because it's fascinating. As the story lead said, this deer did what it's supposed to do. It's a Texas Longhorn, and it's got longhorns. So, yeah we're following that one. Story we're following, the group of farmers out at Deer Grove, Illinois, who got so frustrated at not being able to plant corn, they decided to have a party. And I'm going to be talking about that tomorrow, too. So,
all right. Orion, it's always great chatting with you. Thank you. Have a wonderful weekend.
And you do the same.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us. Make sure you listen to the morning show tomorrow with Orion at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, June the 21st, the last of this week's economic reports coming out today. Topping the list is existing home sales. Analysts are forecasting that number to close in at 5.28 million for the month of May. We will likely see that report at about mid-morning today. Also, a couple of Fed speakers out there. We've already heard from a couple. Loretta Mester a little bit later on. Lel Brainard as well. Patrick Harker speaking. Eric Rosengin as well. All of them on Fed policy after this week's Fed decision not to raise interest rates, but certainly looking ahead to that maybe as early as July. So plenty of things that could move the markets on this Friday, June the 21st.